Would you introduce yourselves, please?
I'm Julia from Sunflower Bean.
I'm Nick from Sunflower Bean.
And I'm Jacob from Sunflower Bean.
Let's see, you're a trio. See, we got that down. Right? We got that down. You're now, is anybody over 20 yet? Has anybody turned 20? You're all still 20.
I'll be 21 in a few months.
Wow. So then are you technically the only legal drinker in the band?
No, I'm not yet.
When it happens.
Yeah, but you will be. So you'll be the guy that they'll be sending on beer runs.
We don't drink or do any drugs, actually, though.
Ladies and gentlemen, meet the world's straightest band, Sunflower.
The straightest band.
We have a little glass of something here and there, but you know, we're not too crazy.
But all kidding aside, before I even get into Best Revisionist History, you said that with a lot of conviction. So is that because you assume that everybody assumes that bands are party animals these days? There's a lot of conviction there.
People assume it.
Yeah. So you wish to break this mold right from moment one?
It's not, I don't want to break the mold, it's just who we are, yeah.
Fair game. We've got your NYC, Queens, Jamaica Queens right here, by the way. Okay. Just thought I'd mention that. We've got your Long Island. Yeah. We've got your Brooklyn. We've got your metal. We've got your classical singing. See, I've done it. There's nothing left, but there's everything to talk about. So, Julia, let's start with classical singing. Because, again, the bio is like, she went to a school and took classical singing. So give me a little more information.
So I went to, I was playing in a band before this as well. We all were.
Right.
I wanted to go to a school. There was one school in New York that was public and also was...
A public high school.
I mean, public and performing and for performers.
So that's not the school for the arts.
Well, there's LaGuardia, which is the big school. It has like 1,000 kids.
Right.
And then there was my school, which was called the Professional Performing Arts School, which was for kids that were already performing. So it's like for a lot of kids that were like on Broadway or like doing all this stuff. But I wanted to be able to go on tour and do band stuff. And I was able to get into the school for singing, and I had to do all these auditions and stuff. And it was like singing in choruses. It was like run by the National Chorale. So we did like 2 or 3 hours of singing every day.
Classical singing and rock and roll singing. So it's kind of interesting because if people didn't know this,
yeah.
Right, what would have been the difference had you not taken that training, just out of curiosity?
I definitely got a lot of, obviously, training, and it definitely definitely helps with recording and shows and just, you know, knowing in general, knowing I put a lot of time into it. And so maybe there's a little more confidence there. I think, you know, it definitely helped me come into some things, and I think we used a lot of that on the record. And I sang in like a church choir briefly to kind of like, I just wanted to be near the music and kind of like choral music in general. So that definitely had a big influence on the band.
Taking guitar lessons from the drummer from Agnostic Front. Duh!
Yeah.
Guitar lessons from a drummer.
Drummers are the smartest one.
I grew up in Mineola, and my mom, when I... Ever since I was young, my mom was a music teacher at this, I guess it was like, it's hard to explain what it is.
She taught classes for,
like, I wouldn't say taught, she was just like...
A music teacher for babies and kids with like disabilities and
there
stuff,
was like
mommy
this, like,
and me classes.
There was like this creative art studio, and she had like, she was basically like... a teacher there for kids from the age of like, I think like 2 to 5.
And they had learning disabilities and stuff.
No, it was normal kids.
Sometimes that was what she did later on.
She did that later. So she played guitar, and she had an acoustic guitar that I always wanted to play. And her hair salon that she went to, the woman who did her hair was dating the drummer of Agnostic Front, who also played guitar really well. And he wasn't a guitar teacher or anything, but he just came over to my house like every week and like gave me lessons for an hour or so. And that's how I started playing.
Let's talk Babies All Right. How many times have you played Baby's All Right?
I don't know. Maybe 30?
I would say 30 to 40.
That's kind of like your dorm, isn't it?
Yeah, that's definitely our spot. It's our home venue.
Yeah, when it first opened, my other band played, I think, the second show they ever had there.
I think that Babies serves a great, there was a hole that needed filling, and I think that Babies filled it because 285 closed and DBA closed and all
so
of
that. Tell me what that, to you, what that hole is, because I have a sense, but.
Yeah, well, it's just, you know, it's the same thing about most, it just kind of what everyone's saying about New York and that all the venues are closing, and there wasn't a really good, I wouldn't say that Babies isn't a DIY spot. It's like a nightlife spot and like a restaurant, and it's really good, but it's like they also have like the best kind of like booking, and they bring in the best bands, and they're really dedicated to having really good bands there, and for a music lover, like, that's all you could want. So it's like a good small to mid-sized venue for a band, and you know, an indie sort of band to play in New York, and like, it's always a fun show, and it's like, they're really nice there. It's really good.
I think it's everything that a good DIY venue should be, because it is DIY, because you can
do
whatever you want there and ask them for a night and promote a show. Anyone can do it.
Yeah.
And they also have the best curation from the two people in charge of booking talent there. They're these two great guys named Ben and Billy. And they always have a lot of connections too, so they can always like score like the undersell play for like the cool band that's playing like Warsaw or Music Hall. Like maybe that night they'll have them play the next night, yeah, secretly.
It's like a venue like bigger and like popular like touring bands, you know, like they'd come and like play 285 Kent for like a really fun show. And but with like a very small local band too, and I think Baby's All Right kind of keeps that going, where they, you know, bring those two things together, like really small bands who are just starting out, and you know, bigger bands who are coming to New York.
Yeah,
or just like a cool like secret show, or just, you know, and then the next night, you know, or even earlier that night, they'll have just like a bill of just totally like local bands.
So you did the EP in 2015. From what I know, you were signed to my friends at Fat Possum during South By in 2015. Did I get that right so far? And then you produce an album in 7 days.
We recorded the EP over the course of a year and a half, and
right,
that was self-produced and self-engineered,
sure,
with one of my closest friends in his basement. And when we were going to do the album, it was much more of like a focused sort of effort, because the EP was just a compilation of like 6 songs that we had recorded over the course of our first year as a band. And we worked with our friend Matthew Molnar, who was a really close friend of ours, and he would just always give us tips, and he's been in a lot of bands for a really long time. He's in a band called Kissing is a Crime.
And he was in the band Friends, and also, but he was also playing in like punk and like hardcore bands since he was like 14 or 15. So we would just always go to him for advice, and he helped us record like a single, and then we were like, why don't we do the album together? And he really kind of gave us a sort of like framework on how to actually put an album together, and like all the work that does need to go into it beforehand. I mean, the kind of like urban legendy, like, oh, you know, we did it in 7 days, is just because we didn't have a lot of money to go into the studio for a long time.
Yeah.
So we don't, you know, we couldn't afford to be Fleetwood Mac and like rent out the studio for a few months.
Yeah, so we basically, we rehearsed in Jacob's basement for like 2 months straight, like playing to a click.
Yeah, we practiced a lot.
We wrote a lot too.
We practiced a lot, and we wrote a lot, and we tried everything out that we could possibly think of, kind of in Matt's like home studio situation in Brooklyn, so that we weren't wasting time in the studio.
It's more like a laptop and a microphone with a sock over it.
Okay, I'm gonna get evil. Ready? So let's see. We got your retro. We got your stoner rock. We got your indie pop. So all of these labels so early on as a band. And I'll mix this up because I usually do the hype thing in a separate question. But between hype and genres and all of that, when you get asked this again and again and again.
I think we pretty much look at the entire history of rock music to draw influence from. That's why it's kind of weird across the board what people pull out of it. So some people might think we sound like you know, the Sundays or the Stone Roses, and other people think we sound like Black Sabbath or the Smashing Pumpkins. I think the band that we draw the most inspiration from would probably be, there's three bands in my mind, and I think it's the Velvet Underground,
sure,
Pink Floyd, and the Beatles.
See, and if you, but think about what you just did there, right? Velvet Underground, I mean, is the loosey-goosiness, and is the loosey-goosiness and the indie-ness. The Pink Floyd is the back the stoner thing, the spacey thing, and well, the Beatles, we don't even have to, you know, that's the songs.
The Beatles was unexpected. I didn't expect him to say that.
I thought Black Sabbath was going to come up.
I think that was just a wild card to kind of trip us all up. I think that's what that was.
Well done, though.
Definitely. I think the way that we always think about it is, we signed with Fat Possum, and then we did this one single, which was I Hear Voices in the Stalker. We did a 7-inch. And for that one, it was kind of like, you know, there was like a lot of people were saying it to us, and we were kind of thinking like, oh, you know, you're a heavy band. This is what you do. You've never recorded it right. You need to go into a studio and record this heavy sound and, you know, do this heavy thing. We were like, yeah, let's try it. We wanted to try it. So we went to a studio called Volume 4, named for the Black Sabbath reference, and we did these two songs really heavy. And we made them, and we were like, okay, like that was fine. Like, that was okay. And I think that kind of experience dictated how we did the album, which was like, you know, it's really boring for us to kind of stay in one genre and kind of not creative, especially since everything we do is really, everything we do is really collaborative. So it's like, it's not like it's just one of us being like, this is the song I want to write. It like has a lot of all of us. So I think that just in general turns it kind of into something else, and I think we don't really want to just be one thing.
Yeah, I don't think we're jumping all over the place either. No. You know, I don't think we're genre conforming or genre bending. You know, we're just doing us.
You don't fit into that really comfy place.
Yeah, I think it's,
well, it's just that
guitar music, rock music, whatever in general, it's just not
even guitar music, but anything. It's just. Like, there's, like, a certain sort of music in America. It's just like, music culture in America is just underground right now.
Music itself isn't popular.
A band like this in the UK, guitar bands, you know, as you call yourself, you know, it's a lot easier in the long run. So what do you think that is? Because this is America. This is the place that UK bands come to, and they die to make it here. And you're here. You grew up in, you know, in the East Coast. You know, we grew up in nice places, and yet, you think the UK is friendlier to you, do you not?
Yeah, I think that there's very simple reasons, I think, to why this happens. I think because the UK is small. I think there's a lot of rock music history that's from the, I mean, if you like rock music, you like UK music, right? There's a lot of, you know, every single band, you know, you just like love. And then number three is that they have the BBC Six, and they have, you know, you can have Savages on the radio that people are actually going to tune into and hear. And in the U.S., that's just not going to happen. There's only specialty.
Unless it's shows like mine.
Only shows like yours. There's only Sirius, XM. Right. That's it. And I think that the fact that it's like silencing a whole kind of form of art. It's just not, you can't hear it. And it kind of dictates what's going to happen and what's not is going to happen.
But gosh golly. You're 20 years old and you're growing up, and you have to know this much about the business that you just had to say all of this to me. So do you think back in the days where that band that there might be a tattoo involved, those T-Rex people, do you think that Mark Bolan, who also had a hard time, you know, I mean, I own everything, every single everything he's ever done, so I'm a pretty good expert on that, on the glam rock era, like in a major way. Do you think that he had it easier? Do you think he felt the same way trying to break out of what he was into that you do now?
Well, I think it's like, it's one of those things where it's not something that we don't just like sit around like complaining and thinking about how hard things are.
But it's complicated. You're 20 years old and you have to know all this stuff rather than just saying, I'm going to make a record and I'm going to be out there playing.
What I think
you
is.
You kind of learn it along the way.
Yeah.
Well, I know you do.
I think the thing is also like, it's part of like the whole SoundCloud, internet kind of generation where you have to, you know, if you, the amazing things about being able to home record and almost taking away the studio, because you can kind of bring it to yourself a little bit and do all this stuff, kind of creates another thing where you have to do, it's not like you are like, you know, your little person and then, you know, you go to the label and then they make you and then you do this thing. It's like you have to be everything. You have to be the promoter, you have to think of all the things, you have to be in charge of everything, you have to let everyone know when everything's happening, you have to be funny, you have to be cute, you have to be stylish, you have to be this, you know, and you have to be all of it wrapped into one and be totally in control of it for a label to even care about you, number one, to even like spark their interest. And I feel, you know, like I feel like I'm sounding like a psycho for knowing all this, but we've all, like, you know, music was always what we all wanted to do, and it's just part of being involved that you learn. It's like, oh, I want to tell the people that like music when my show is, like, I have to make like a post about it, like it's like fucking, like, sorry for cursing, but like a post, like factory, you know.
How can you possibly be, you know, I mean, heck, there was Nico and there was this and there was this. How can you be a lead singer in a band and a model at the same time and take responsibility and be able to do all these things at once and have people take you seriously when one moment you're wearing Yves Saint Laurent and the next minute you're saying you're the lead singer of a guitar band? How do we blow that up, and do we care?
I think it's a lot of things. I think that for me, in my life, kind of my attitude was always like, to kind of go for it. And like the first band that I was in, we were a band for 2 days and then we had our first show, you know what I mean? So, and I, you know, we hardly knew how to play. So we just kind of, I've always kind of jumped into stuff. And then, with the kind of fashion stuff, it's sort of, it kind of happened, I think genetically with height, and I dyed my hair blonde, you know, I kind of got involved in it, and then sort of it made me realize more things maybe about kind of, especially where, you know, women stand in a lot of these places, and it made me think about wanting to just, you know, do what I wanted to do, or even like kind of be involved in the world of beauty a little bit, and kind of not letting, like, what if I want to be in a magazine and I want to look this way, and then I also want to do this, and almost the fact that it kind of made people sort of confused or upset makes me want to be even better. Do you know what I mean? The reason that I'm not bothered by it really is that I'm not worried, because I believe in us so much, and I know in my heart who I am, and I know what we do, and I know that we're always working and we're always getting better, and I feel so sincerely about what we do that it doesn't really like touch me in a way, or I'm not trying to sound like pretentious, I just mean like this is who we are, and so I'm not kind of scared by that, because I know I'm always gonna be, you know, this is where I'm always gonna be.
So I have invented a thing called a musical sandwich, and what it is two of your songs on the outside and then songs by anybody else you want to play in between.